infinite banking is not your game. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to give you what you want.
Right.
So you've got to shore up what the objective of every dollar is. And I have some dollars that I'm great with putting to being exposed to risk.
Right.
Because that's the possibility of gain, but it's the possibility of loss.
So in part two of our episode with Jordan Cole, what we talk about is more of a tactical approach to infinite banking, but then also his gamification of how he looks at business and how he didn't really feel like he's selling anything. What he's doing is he's educating and he's building trust, because in what we're doing with infinite banking and insurance is those two things. It's a concept that has to be caught, not taught. And what he does a really good job at answering questions specifically about infinite banking, but also about the legacy that he wants to leave with generations to come down the road. You're going to love episode two with Jordan Cole. Tell me about your first year in the financial planning business. I mean, like, when I say tell me about tactical, like, what was it like? What did you do?
You know, I mentioned before the concept of gamifying something. I just had to find a way, because the last thing I wanted to do was be somebody that I didn't want to talk to. Mm. Right?
That's a great,
because that's a tough thing to try to gear yourself up for on a day-to-day basis. If you know, would I want to talk to me if I'm calling on myself? Probably not. So what do I do to overcome that? And I, one, poured myself into the infinite banking, you know, just understanding the strategy and the solutions, and then said, if I knew someone's problem prior to engaging with them, and I also knew that I had the solution to said problem, how much easier of an approach is that,
right,
than me trying to pull some solution, some type of a connection out of you, mm-hmm, and saying, hey, let's talk. Maybe just out of happenstance, we happen to be a fit. Well, I mean, you're a busy guy. Do you really want to like go 8 rounds with me, 9 rounds with me to just like figure if we just may happen to be a fit so that I can make a sale? Or if I knew that you had a problem and I had the financial cure to cancer for that problem, then that changes the dynamic so much more.
It changes everything.
And so once I kind of got that in my head and I said, oh, okay, I can actually visualize. It's like a golf shot. It's like a basket, you know, on the basketball court. If you can visualize the thing going in, if you can visualize it being seen through from start to finish, then that's a totally different thing than kind of just, you know, opening the door and saying, let's just, so, you know, throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks.
So I'm going to dive into that. How did you gamify the financial planning business that first year?
I stopped thinking about it in terms of selling a product and started thinking about it in terms of educating people.
Okay.
And once that transition mentally occurred, then all of a sudden it was, well, I don't have to sell anything. I just have to help somebody understand. And this is one of the best business. I still tell this to all the young guys that come through our agency and our firm. One of the best pieces of advice that I've just kind of learned over the years is, in order for someone to become a client in our business or in any business, it's just simply a combination of trust and education, right?
Right.
So let's just say if you were going to try to sell something to your mother, that doesn't require a lot of education, because trust is going to make up about 98% of that.
Absolutely.
If you're going to try to sell someone that you never met off the street, education is going to have to play a big factor in that. And then the trust piece it's got a long way to go, right? There's not a lot of trust. You know, if you look at it, I always envision for some reason a chasm, and there's a bridge that has to get from not a client to client.
Right.
And 20% of it is trust, or 50% of it is trust, and then the rest of it's education. And that'll just vary by every single person.
It's
so
a sliding scale.
As I started in the business, and over time, once I figured that it really just comes down to those two elements, that made it less daunting, because there's so many different dynamics at play in sales. You don't want to have to try and make it any more complicated than it already is. So this is just my pea brain trying to think, I've got something really challenging here on my hands. What can I do to make it more simple? Mm. And that's really, I've just kind of rinsed and repeated that same strategy over and over. And then the gamifying piece was probably more, that's where I tapped into the competitive nature of what I did, whether it was with my peers at the agency or peers across the country, or really just me. If I wrote something down, I was going to make 20 calls that day, or if I was going to produce X this, you know, X production in Q1, if I wanted to be the top producer in the country in year one, that accomplishment, I made it like it was winning the Stanley Cup, or if I was winning the US Open, like that. And it was, you know, when you look back, it's like, well, it was all a means to an end.
Sure.
It's just, it's making a game out of something that is going to feed my family and build a business, but it taps into that competitive nature. And as silly and trivial as it may seem, it is what propelled me to starting strong out of the gate.
That's why it's so important to have some sort of competitive streak in what you're doing. Give me your 60-second explanation of infinite banking.
Okay. So infinite banking is really all about using a life insurance strategy or a life insurance policy as a means of taking over the function of the bank in our life. As Nelson Nash, who's the author of Become Your Own Banker, the creator of the infinite banking concept, he said, if I can take the banking function from the commercial level and play it at the you and me level, where I am an owner, not a customer of the banking function, then by definition, I can grow my wealth dramatically and much more efficiently. But it's all about control. It's about control. And we just so happen to use a life insurance product to do that.
Perfect. Why does everyone need to be in the banking industry?
Banking is a function that's occurring all around us, okay? So whether we want to acknowledge it or not, it's like gravity. You can acknowledge it or not, but you're going to end up probably worse off for it if you don't. Banking is basically the movement of money to and from all the entities around us. And if you understand how banks make money, then you can actually tap into that part of the macroeconomic environment and profit on it yourself. You're either going to be a customer or you're going to be an owner of a bank. Those are your two options. So you can either just do nothing and continue to be a bank customer, right? Where we're putting deposits in and the bank is making money on our deposits, or we can say, if I understand what's really going on in the world, in finance, and I understand the bank's role in the greater financial structure, why would I not want to participate in profiting on that function? And that's what infinite banking is about.
It's a great answer. Okay, we've talked about infinite banking. You're in that, been in it 11 years. What is the most creative way you've seen the infinite banking concept used?
Man, I work primarily with business owners and real estate investors.
Okay.
Lately, I'll just use something more relevant from previous engagements with some clients. I don't know if you know this, but interest rates went up in the last couple years. So all of a sudden, clients of mine who were holding seven-figure lines of credit for their business that were at 3 or 4 are now at 8, 9, et cetera. And we have recently started using a lot of their policies, whether they existed before or now, we're just creating them as a way to leverage those lines of credit, the life insurance policy, which has a fixed contractual guaranteed rate, and with our company at 4%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 4% simple interest, right? So, or average daily balance compounding. Right. But without going into the details of all that, they now prioritize being the owner and overtaking their debt that they have to other entities, and saying that they think, I can have capital in this place where I can earn, and then I can go and overtake my debt that we know is at a higher interest. But now what that really gives them is control over the function. They don't have to make minimum payments. They don't have to be at the mercy of whatever the Fed does. Mm-hmm. They are now getting back control over that function. It just goes back to what I was saying at a higher level. And that's just one function of, let's say you're a business owner who's, you know, a farmer, right? They have a ton of capital that they need to deploy and a ton of revenue coming in.
Right.
And so if they can basically provide some type of middle ground where they can deploy capital from their entity,
their bank,
the life insurance policy in this case, and then have that money flow back into their bank and rinse and repeat without taking any additional risk, without changing their cash flow, without working any harder, without doing anything really different. We're just basically creating the source of capital and a way to capture compounding interest on this middle ground, and they are now employing the banking system in their life. So to answer your question, that's an example, and it changes every time. That's the beauty of what we do. If I empower you as a client to understand what infinite banking is about, I'm not with you every day in your business. But if you understand infinite banking, it's the teach a man to fish versus teach, you know, fish in form.
Right.
If you understand, then all of a sudden you'll start to see opportunities out there. And it's just as simple as, if I have capital here and there's opportunities out there and I know that I have capital to deploy for said opportunity, how many more of those can I take advantage of?
Right.
And that's the beauty of this business, is I don't have to sell very much anymore. I just talk about opportunities, ideas, and then get them going. And my clients are the heroes of their story. I'm just the person kind of, you know, walking alongside them, guiding them and getting them going. It's really amazing what some of these people can come up with.
Who is your perfect IBC client?
I would say it's less about vocation and more about mentality.
Okay.
And I would say very much so to that regard.
Of all your IBC clients, what do the vast majority of them do for a living?
Own their own business.
Give me three examples.
One of them would own a pharmacy.
Okay.
One of them would own a building business. They're a home builder.
Okay, great.
And then one of them owns a logistics business.
So you're looking at anybody that has a business, that owns a business where there's large amounts of cash flow coming in, large amounts of cash flow coming out.
Sure.
So anyone that owns that, a chiropractor,
mm-hmm.
a construction guy.
Yep.
What about like home flippers?
Like, oh, 100%.
I've got some guys that do that, and I think this is a great
company. Well, I would say 80% of my book is made up of real estate investors who have an entrepreneurial kind of edge to them, right? They own their own business, and then more business owners in the traditional sense, if that makes sense, right?
Makes total sense.
All business owners, all the same mentality, all entrepreneurs, all chasing deals and have that kind of fire in their belly. Those are my favorite people to work with.
So I think the message here is this. If you're a business owner out there, you need to at least go down this road of understanding and trying to learn infinite banking. If it's not for you, it's not for you. But the message I think from Jordan and from myself is this, because here's the thing, I'm a disciple. Like, I mean, I believe in it. I believe in it wholeheartedly. But if you're a business owner out there right now, you need to at least go down the rabbit hole of finding good education and learning and asking questions to someone that knows about infinite banking to see if it's something that resonates with you, because it's life-changing. It really, really is life-changing. So if somebody's out there right now, they're listening to this or watching this on YouTube or anywhere else, if you have a question about Infinite Banking or you own a business, please email us, email me, thomas@thomascox.co. I will get you connected with everything that you need to know about Infinite Banking. Again, it's worth a 30-minute phone call. Agree?
Oh, 100%.
Worth a 30-minute phone call
to
understand this at least a little mm-hmm. bit, okay? So let's talk about this. We've talked about the IBC stuff. We've talked a lot about investing, or a lot about like people that do invest. Where do you invest?
It's a great question. I invest in currently my business and my wife's business. My wife's also an entrepreneur. She just opened a fitness studio in Birmingham, Supertone.
Really? Tell me about it.
Supertone is a group fitness concept, and it's cycle and strength. And it is on Central in Homewood, Alabama. Yeah, right
Central
there.
Central Avenue in Homewood.
Yeah, the old Huffstetler Hardware building, if you're familiar with that.
Yes, what's it called? Supertone.
Supertone, yeah. They opened in March, and her and her business partner, Catherine, I mean, they're crushing it. They make me look silly. But that was an investment from our family's standpoint. We said, hey, look, we don't want outside investors. We want to do this ourselves. Let's pour our capital and our hard-earned money and time and energy into this and make this thing work. And so that was a big one.
So you've taken some money and put it into that.
Uh-huh.
What else? Where else do you invest? Like any of your... Because here's the thing. People mm-hmm. talk about passive income all the time.
For sure.
And it's super buzzword right now.
Right.
But here's the thing we have to communicate to people is if you don't have excess active income, you can't produce passive income.
That's
people
right.
think that passive income is this thing that you flip on and flip off. You got to have money to make your money work.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people this all the time. When your money goes out, it needs to bring back friends.
That's a great line.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where are you making your money work?
Yeah.
Other than the business, where are you making your money work for you? Anything else besides
sure.
those businesses?
Well, it's honestly, right now, it's the two businesses. I mean, yep. I have a 401k, I have a deferred comp plan, things like that. I take a lot of risk and stuff like that. I know,
okay,
you can
okay,
believe
okay,
it.
Okay. Stop. So you have a 401k plan.
I do.
Okay. So a lot of these IVC people
mm-hmm.
do not like 401k plans.
Right.
Tell me why you like it, because it's kind of like blasphemy a little bit in the mm-hmm. IBC world. So tell me why is it
yeah.
an IBC disciple, you have a 401k.
Totally. I was actually doing the math on it yesterday. I have, I think, 8 life insurance policies
okay.
between myself, my wife, and my kids,
yes.
7 and 3. I have a 401k plan that I put in money to the match, not beyond the match, right? And my contribution is a Roth 401k option.
I will say this. If you've got a match,
mm-hmm.
it's free money.
Correct.
So I got a friend of mine. He's a head football coach at a college. And he's like 31. He's a killer.
It's awesome.
He's an absolute killer.
Yeah.
And I told him, because he called, mm-hmm. we're talking about it. I said, what are you doing? And he said, well, I don't have a whole lot of idea what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I said, if you've got a match, max it out. Because he makes $300,000 or $400,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Said max it out and then
yeah.
let's look at other things.
But well, that's right.
Match now, it's pretty funny.
That's right. And so, you know, this is my thing about financial people, entertainers.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say entertainers, financial entertainers, right? Of which I am not. So let's just go ahead and clear that up.
Yeah.
If you are trying to educate yourself about finances and you have anybody say the words always or never when it refers to a financial strategy, proceed with caution.
It's great advice.
Okay. I, not perfect. Maybe I've done that before in the past. I really try not to, especially with my clients.
Sure.
If someone walks in and they have $500,000 or $5 million or whatever the number is in a 401k plan, you know what that is? That's $5 million or $500,000 more than they would if it was just going out the door to random crap.
No doubt.
Right? Because it's always compared to what? One thing that Justin Kraft, principal at Nallen, has said over the years is when it comes to financial strategies, you use the 401k thing as an example, everything is compared to what? 401k is, this is a statement that you might hear. 401k is bad compared to what? Right? IBC or insurance is too expensive.
Compared to what?
Compared to what? It frames everything. You don't have to fight these battles. I never have to fight a battle. You know, people ask like, oh, well, how do you overcome these objections about whole life insurance? Dave Ramsey says it's trash, it's terrible, et cetera. And I'm like, well, usually people have kind of figured that out on their own. But if they are, let's say they are a dyed in the wool, they want to do what Dave Ramsey says, or Susie Orman or any of these financial entertainers, and they just want to follow them, they're usually not a great prospect for me, one. Two, because they're not individual thinkers, they're not free thinkers. But two, let's say they are, and I really just wanted to engage with them, I would just ask that those three words, compared to what?
I think a lot of the times when we get the, and I think Dave Ramsey helped me so much from the time I was like exiting college till about I was 32, 33.
That's right.
But the reason he was so good for me was because he was speaking to my demographic.
Oh, yeah.
I was early in my 20s, early 30s. I didn't make much money.
Mm-hmm.
I was the card-carrying poster child for middle class.
Mm-hmm.
We had less than $100,000 of income. We were not paycheck to paycheck,
mm-hmm.
but that's who we were.
Sure.
And so he helped me more than anything from a budgetary standpoint. Now, I will say this. I had a guy talk to me about whole life insurance at one point. He did never mention anything about infinite banking.
Yeah.
And he sold it horribly. And I said no. Okay.
Yeah.
But once I
understand that,
once you get to a certain point economically to where you do have excess and you do have to move money around and you have to not necessarily borrow, but you have influxes and outfluxes of cash, that's when the infinite banking concept, I know, makes so much more sense.
So how do you use yours?
I use mine in real estate investing mostly because I do a lot of private money lending.
It's amazing.
I do a lot of investing in multifamily.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you a great example. So I've got a guy that I work with, and he is a very, very consistent home flipper. But he has an end user, end buyer already mm-hmm. in place.
Mm-hmm.
And so in essence, I take money from my policy, borrow it from my policy at a 4% rate, because that's contractually guaranteed. I then give that money to him. But the rate that he gives me is simple interest. Let's just use a great example of stuff I've done in the past. 15% simple interest
right.
for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So annually, that's a 30% rate. So I'm borrowing from my policy at 2% because it's only 6 months.
That's right, yep.
I'm giving him that money, and then I get 15%.
Mm-hmm.
So on the back end, I'm really making 13% mm-hmm. on my money. But all the while, my money is in my policy working at a 4% rate growing and a dividend on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
So my money's working twice.
Yeah.
If you can make your money work twice, it is a freeing and mind-altering thing that creates wealth, because it's hard enough to make money. But on the front end, making money is really, really easy. Keeping money is what's so hard.
It's so true. And I tell people, I'm like, look, what I don't want to have happen is I don't want to be pouring money or pouring water into the bucket and have 15 holes in the bottom of the bucket.
No.
Because all that you're going to do is exert yourself to pour money faster and faster, or water. I'm mixing my metaphors. Pouring water more and more at a faster rate into the bucket to fill it up to overcome how fast it's flowing out the back.
Right.
So if you have a place where you could put money that's guaranteed to never go down in value, that's safe, regardless of what the economy does, who gets elected, what the Fed does, that you know that you have access to whenever you want it, and that when you use it, it's not going to go down, it's only going to go up, and it's going to do that on a exponential compounding rate, not linear. It's going to be exponential, because that's, you know, Einstein's was the eighth wonder of the world, ninth wonder of the world. Yeah. So that all happens, and I don't have to sell you on not doing that hard money lending deal.
No.
Because you're committed to that. That's going to return more in a timestamp. That's going to return more than you'll make just having money sit in the policy stagnant. Mm-hmm. So it's already going to be great just to hoard money and build up money in a policy. You're going to have money in there, and it's going to grow. But how much more impactful can those dollars be to returning more if you can simultaneously deploy them to make even a larger ROI, i.e. in real estate, i.e. in a business venture? Hard money lending is a great example. That's what I probably should have said about probably the most no-brainer idea when it comes to infinite banking. If I can find a person who hard money lends, and we have clients to do a lot, it's the easiest thing in the world. All we're doing is changing the address of the money.
That's it.
And everything else is the same. And they can still kill it with their returns.
Justin Kraft told me this, and this is very insightful. He looked at me in his office one day. We were going through, and I was learning about this.
Mm-hmm.
He said, hey, Thomas, if you're going to get an IBC policy and you're not going to use it for investments, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. Just has a storehouse for your wealth.
Sure.
But he said, the key and the magic behind having an IBC policy is deploying that capital to use it to make more wealth.
Yeah.
Of the 5 or 6 times that we met leading up to me getting into this game, that was the most insightful, impactful statement I had ever heard.
Why was that?
Because it was a freeing thought that he was not trying to sell me something.
There you go.
He gave me the freedom to say no, but he was also giving me the ability and the knowledge to say, you got to take the money and go use it. And I go back to this phrase, and this is a wonderful phrase. My money has to go make more money. When your money goes out, it's got to bring back friends. And in this concept, in private money lending, any kind of investing, that is what it's doing.
100%.
So it's just helped us so much. So let me ask you a question. Other than your 401k, do you have any market exposure? Meaning,
yeah, I mean, I've got 401k and then a qualified, or I'm sorry, yeah, like a non-contributory deferred comp plan, basically. Gotcha. What it is.
Perfect.
And I'm all about, like, look, like to kind of put a bow on that conversation, yeah, when you about fell out of your chair about the 401k thing. It's all about the tactful solution that you're trying to attain, the end goal, right? Infinite banking is not the end all be all. It can't. It cannot be all things to, mm-hmm, all people. Nothing is that. So it would be disingenuous for me to say, oh, I've got money over here because it's the only thing that, you know, the only place it can be because it's going to give me all these things.
Right.
It's going to give us some things, which is why I love the structure of our group at Nowlin. It's a 50-year-old financial planning firm, turns 50 this year. We, you know, manage over $1 billion of assets. We have holistic planning people. Some people just manage money. Some people do 401k plans. Some people do, you know, group plans. Some people do infinite banking, but it's all trying to meet our clients where they are,
right,
and saying, if you want to be all in on the market, as Justin told you, I would tell you the same. Infinite banking is not your game. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to give you what you want.
Right.
So you've got to shore up what the objective of every dollar is. And I have some dollars that I'm great with putting to being exposed to risk,
right,
because that's the possibility of gain, but it's the possibility of loss. And the dollars that I don't want to lose, which is probably 80 cents of every dollar for, you know, speaking as a universally from a household standpoint,
right,
80 cents of every dollar is more of a, this is a dollar that's earmarked for a specific purpose in the future. It's savings, not investing. Mm-hmm. If it's savings, it needs to go in an infinite banking policy. It needs to be part of the infinite banking strategy.
How do you use your IBC?
Oh, gosh. Yep. My first policy was January of 2014.
Okay.
I was 25. Uh-huh. No, 24. I was 24 years old. Since then, I've done more and bigger policies every time because, and I'm going to get to your answer, but as I've gone along that route, and this happens to every client, they look at life insurance as an expense when they start, and it may take 6 months, it may take 5 years. But eventually, if they stay on the infinite banking strategy path, that trajectory will change their mentality from life insurance as an expense to life insurance as an asset. And then once you see through that lens, it's not what is my life insurance going to cost, it's how much can I put in there.
Sure.
See the difference between those two? And so as I've done that, I just pour more and more and more into, as my income grows, as my business grows, as my needs for capital also increase, well, those two are just going to be married. So I've used them for paying taxes, for buying cars, for doing a renovation on the house, I couldn't tell you. I mean, it's always money being deployed and cycled back through.
It's a revolving door.
Things that I would use cash for over all these years. I mean, starting businesses. I've also started, you know, myself and three other business partners have started an infinite banking, basically sub-brand under the Nowlin brand.
Tell me about that.
That's Unlimit Wealth.
Yeah.
So Unlimit Wealth, you've been on our podcast.
Yeah.
We said we need to carve out an entity for infinite banking as a space within the Nowlin brand.
Okay.
And Nowlin is a holistic planning solution. And we needed one thing to be an ever-present education tool. As I mentioned before, it's education and trust.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we going to go? What are we going to do to bring about a premier education experience for a client, as opposed to saying, go read this book on Amazon and let's talk in 6 months? That does work. I'd still do that. But hey, what about podcasts? What about blogs? What about FAQs with Loom videos explaining why does it make sense to borrow my own money, you know, and pay interest to myself?
Sure.
Like these things that people are going to wonder, they can navigate all that through Unlimit. That was an investment. That was money that I pulled from a policy to start that whole entity. So then it can do what you say, which is going to bring back friends when I deploy the cash. Where does all that cash reside? Life insurance. Where does it go? Infinite places. And if I'm going to have to deploy the cash, I may as well put it somewhere that's going to be a lot more efficient than sitting in my savings account.
So there's a lot of business life in 34 years that you've been around, from your folks to you, to from Justin, from Mr. Charlie to Nelson. I mean, like, you got tons of people around you that have just breathed tons of life into you. What's the number one business lesson you think all people should be taught?
Do the right thing. Do the right thing by, not by you, by the person that's across the table from you. Justin Kraft taught me that. He's a mentor of mine. He's a great friend. Don't tell him he's a mentor of mine. He lives it. He's done it. I've tried to do it the best I can. I'm by no means imperfect, but it's the foundation that everything else is built upon in my business. It just is.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if it, let's just say it's not, well, where else is it going to fit? Where, I mean, are you going to do all these other things? And then, oh, at this point, as long as these criteria stack up, then it makes sense to do right by the client, or do right by, just even if they're not clients, just right by other people, you know? And just the go-giver mentality is just, it's so good. I mean, it's just, it's, I fought it for a long time. I'm, you know, just as a skeptic, I'm like, oh, this is some, you know, kind of kumbaya BS book that was out there and that's gotten a lot of traction, sold some books. But the concept of just, you will give to someone and it will be returned to you tenfold. You can't fight it because it just is, right?
It just happens, and it happens organically.
It's like gravity.
But here's the thing, Jordan. Here's the hard part about that. It happens slow.
That's right.
And people don't want slow.
Mm-hmm.
But it all goes back to the fable that's a gazillion years old of the tortoise and the hare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you just are consistent with what you're doing, and this is with food, this is with exercise, this is with finance.
So true.
You're just so consistent with what you're doing and not, you know, peeking around and looking at shiny object syndrome. I go back to the story of Nehemiah in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God said, told Nehemiah to build this wall. All these people came down. They're trying to distract him. And there's a verse in the Bible where Nehemiah is on a ladder. And these people from this other country or other group of people that were coming down, they're trying to distract him. They wanted to talk to him. He's on the ladder, and I can see the picture. He's on the ladder, and this guy comes and says, hey, come down here, let's talk about so-and-so. And he looks at him, and he goes, I am doing a good work, and I cannot come down.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's the best biblical picture of not being distracted and consistency.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about the inputs, not analyzing the outputs.
It's all about the inputs.
Right?
So talk about this. So you're 34, you got two kids.
Mm-hmm.
How do you set goals?
Oh, man. I'm a total goal geek.
Mm-hmm.
Justin could tell you that. My business partners could tell you that. Again, I'm not a smart guy. I just believe in, if I can find a way to break things down to where I could consume them and I can make it make sense in my mind, if I have a lofty goal, it just makes it so much more doable for me. For example, for at the beginning of the year, this is a John Maxwell thing I stole. At the end of every year, I like to try to take 4 or 5 days in what I call the off season, where nothing's happening between Christmas and New Year's, like where nothing gets done.
No one does anything.
No. And it's a great time to reflect on what was good and just be thankful for what the Lord has given. Mm-hmm. And just really like let that wash over you, all the good, the bad, the ugly, and turn the table a little bit mentally to, well, what did I do this year? And what am I going to do this year, next year?
Yeah.
Where are we going? Where do we go? Where do we come from? Where are we going? And I put that into practice my entire career. And I am such, I didn't know this about myself until I did StrengthsFinder.
Yeah.
I've done it a long time ago,
sure.
In like 2010. Yeah. So it was like 14 years ago. I did it again this year. I am both high in context and futuristic, which to me seemed like they were juxtaposed against one another. And when I got a little bit more explanation from the lady who helped us do it, she's like, well, actually, those have to kind of marry one another. And you're always needing the context of what is happening around me. I need to see the full parameters of what's happening around me in order for me to cast a vision of where we can go.
Right.
And once I learned that about myself and it was plainly spelled out, it made all the sense in the world as to why I love to say, okay, this goal is out here. It's a 600-yard par five. I can't do it in one shot.
Mm.
I can hit a 350-yard drive if I want to. I'm still halfway there, basically.
Right?
And that's if I can, which I can't.
Yeah.
But if I could, I'm still not going to do it all at once in one big chunk. So the thought of, like what you said, is just, what am I doing over the course of the year? No, no, over the course of a quarter? No, over the course of a week? Really, it's about the day. And so if I can get everything down to a day-to-day habit, and this year it was, I spent hours doing this because I said, I want to have the best year ever. I want to have the best year ever in all these elements of my life, parenting, business, fitness, you name it. And it came down to, from a business standpoint, 3 calls a day. I don't care if it's me picking up the phone and calling you and going to lunch.
Right.
Just 3 calls a day. And when I thought about it, I said, there's no way that is going to do anything. But then I started doing the math and I said, if I was just going to have 10%, 8% maybe of those calls become a revenue generator, then I would have the best year I've ever had. And it was just, once you kind of made something like that into a digestible thing, then you're able to really approach it in a different way with confidence too.
So what I'm hearing you say is the key to goals is not necessarily having the figurative goal
mm-hmm.
in the windshield, but it's having the actual action step and the roadmap to how to get to that thing. It's not about the pie in the sky. I want to make this much money. I want to do this thing. The key is, what am I going to do? How am I going to get to said goal?
That's right.
And what are the habits to do there?
Yeah. I mean, it's the SMART goal thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, time bound.
Yeah.
Right? We probably all
time bound. That's huge.
Yep. And so with that being said, the only other thing I would say is it's got to be written down.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just have, and I have it sitting on my desk every day. Yep. I look at it. Some days I stare at it longer than others, but it's there if I, it's just kind of looking back at me.
Sure.
It's my accountability piece.
Yeah.
And I'm so crystal clear on that stuff that it just, it's the outcome that I've already achieved in my mind.
Yeah.
And then it forces you to have the behavior in order to create the outcome that you want. The behaviors will just kind of naturally happen.
Correct.
Right? It's like a really crazy golf swing, right? You've seen these, like Jim Furyk, right?
Yeah.
He has that really high release and kind of it almost does like a figure eight in the air. What's the end goal? He's still going to hit the ball just like Tiger or Rory or Justin Thomas or Scottie Scheffler. He's going to hit the ball the same way, but his body is doing all this funky stuff. But at the end of the day, he knows no matter what, I got to get to this point. The club has to turn. The face has to hit the ball at the right spot. All of that has to happen. I don't care what track it's going to run along the way. And that's really what time-bound goals and specific, measurable, et cetera, all those goals, I geek out over it. I just love the hunt.
Yeah.
And I get to the end of the year and I find that if I don't reach them, it's way more miserable than me having euphoria over reaching them.
Sure.
Oh, but that's a competitive thing.
There's
right?
no doubt.
That's a losing is way worse than winning
yeah.
Thing.
So I mean, these, when I sit down and talk to people, I send them a list of thoughts and things
mm-hmm.
and I get you to put down something. And you put something down here that was intriguing to me because I believe in the same thing. You said, leaving a legacy. How can you do that in what you do?
I think that in this business, it's such a people business. The beauty of it is it's set up to be a generational thing, right? So
uh-huh.
you start working with the dad and the mom, or let's say you start working with a 20-year-old
mm-hmm.
and you're 20 in the business, and then that 20-year-old gets married and then they have kids and you start handling their stuff and they get out of school and then they get a job and then they get married. Well, then you're like 3 generations in, maybe more, and you've been the one constant in their financial life. That is so appealing to me.
Sure.
And so awesome. And the concept of, just from a vocational standpoint, being an ever-present rock or foundation in someone else's life and kind of
wow.
being the journey or going along the journey with them and being the guide through the journey.
Right.
Is an honor. So that's a big honor for me to try to take into account.
As your kids get older too, you're going to see that, because my oldest kid's 15, I have 15, 12, and 8. As your kids get older too,
mm-hmm.
you'll start to want to teach those concepts. So like the other day, we're coming back from the beach and it was just me and Tegan, my 12-year-old. And he gets it more than my 15-year-old does. Not a knock at my 15-year-old. Their brains work differently. And like Tegan set in on meetings with me, Justin, and clients.
Mm-hmm.
And like Justin said, I'll hire him tomorrow. But like we were going over compounding interest in the car and like trying to explain those types of things.
Okay.
And it's just two things our parents didn't typically talk to us about. Your parents probably did, mine didn't. Two things parents don't talk to their kids about that they should. Number one, sex. Not a topic for this conversation.
Yeah.
Number two is money.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, they were faux pas growing up.
Oh, for sure.
And so we try to talk about both of those things. Yeah. Our kids know all about sex and all about, like, you know, mm-hmm. the way those things are, but then also the financial part
right.
of like how things work. And they have realized after seeing their friends that we are different. So,
in what way?
I'm glad you asked. So this is a conversation that happened yesterday. Okay, my 15-year-old and I are in the car. She's a girl. She's a volleyball player. And she says, I'm going to use a false name. She goes, Dad, Susie told me about what happened with her and her mom. I said, what happened? And she goes, Susie ran up $700 on her mom's credit card in 1 month on food. This is a 16-year-old kid that had her mom's credit card. That ran up $700 of just going out to eat in 1 month. My family doesn't spend $700 going out to eat in 3 months. And she was dumbfounded. But for most kids, that's kind of normal.
Right.
And it made my soul smile on the inside.
That's amazing.
That she thought.
She had the barometer that allowed her to understand. Red flag there. Something's wrong.
Something's wrong with the situation.
That's not normal.
Yeah. So I think that leaving a legacy sounds so fancy, but man, we only get our kids so long.
Yeah. I mean, and I think less about, I mean, you ask about that vocationally. That's how I answered it, but it's way more. I mean, I got into this business for a lot of reasons, one of which, you know, for what it does allow me to do on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm in this business now. Today, I took both our kids. Dropped one of them off at a camp, a summer mm-hmm. camp at 9. I had my other one, took him to the Hero Donuts, got some donuts, went back to the office. We sat there and had breakfast as much as you can have breakfast with a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
And then my wife came from a doctor's appointment, picked him up, and then I came here. And so I was at the office for 5 minutes maybe.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave here, hop on a call, you know, maybe go like hit some golf balls.
Yeah.
But all the.
Are you going to make your 3 calls today?
Sure, I'll make my 3 calls for you. But what I'm going to make sure I do is I was talking to my daughter this morning about, hey, she really wants to get into tennis.
Mm.
She wants to get into golf. She wants to get into volleyball. She's just obsessed. She wants to just like get into something. And the fact that I can play an active role in that is
wonderful.
The most important thing.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Sure. All right.
So, Thomas, what's the alternative investing?
So when people think of investing, they think of the market. Put money in the stock market, it grows, you leave it alone there, okay? But what people don't understand is what alternative investing is. And alternative investing in the simplest form is taking money, investing it in something outside of the market, and letting that asset grow. For example, real estate is probably the number one alternative investing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you buy a rental home, which is a very easy entry, you buy a rental home, you buy it, you have a mortgage and expenses of $800 a month. You charge $1,200 a month for the rent. You have a $400 cash flow. You make money there, but you're also, the asset is growing in value. That's one. Buying private money lending, things mm-hmm. like that, or also any ownership in any other businesses. There's a lot of people out there that can take money, give it to said business owner, your wife, them have equity in that business, and then that asset, the business grows, they get to sell it, they can create money on the back end. So alternative investing is something that I think that we have to educate people on, that just because you don't invest in the stock market, that is not the only way. And a lot of people don't understand it because it's not a common term that's talked about. And I think as the thing of business owners and investing becomes more of a forefront and more of a topic, we have to get people to understand what alternative investing is.
So over the past 4, 5, 6 years, I've seen this in my business. People are more apt to want to learn more about, hey, there's got to be something more out there than sticking it into stocks or bonds or mutual funds or 401ks. Have you seen that from your vantage point?
I have. And here's what I think the number one culprit of that is. And this is, and people most of the time when they talk about social media and the media and things like that, they rip on how bad it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there are people out there that talk about alternative investing and talk about other ways on the TikTok and on Instagram and mm-hmm. Facebook and all those things. And I think what that's done is it's brought to light, it's got people's attention. And then when it gets their attention, they start asking questions.
That's right.
And so I think that there's a good thing there in the social media portion of it. And so when they do that, so the number one question I get asked, and I get asked this 3 or 4 times a month, no lie, because people understand that I've got a decent knowledge about just investing in general. And so I get people that are afraid to go to some fancy financial advisor and they'll say, hey, Thomas, I just got a bonus for 40 grand. What do I do with it?
Oh, totally.
Or we just sold our house and we've got an extra $100,000. What do I do with it? And or my dad died or we sold my whatever. I get the question all the time.
100%.
And if you don't have anything right now today, the best thing to do is to put it into a high yield savings account and let's figure out where we can deploy that money. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is IBC. Sometimes it's real estate, whatever.
Yep, yep.
But having an alternative investing thought to give someone is absolutely critical because there are so many different ways to do this, to invest other than just the market.
Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite lines is, if traditional financial planning really worked, then why do so many people retire broke?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And you know what? COVID, not to belabor the point, yep. COVID was the catalyst to where people stopped. They had to.
Mm.
They reflected. They looked at their stuff. They looked at their job, what was bringing in income.
Right.
Is this worth it? Is the sacrifice I'm making for my family, being away from them, worth it? How else am I going to make money? Because it's so easy to put your head down and just grind and then look up and you're 65 and then you find out if you've made it or not.
Sure.
So people had to kind of pause and assess. And I think that was a huge catalyst for people looking for these alternative types of investments.
And it's been good for us.
Yeah.
So
tell me about the income fund, your income fund.
So what we did is I didn't get tired of getting the question asked, but I got asked so many times and I said, how can I figure out a way to help these people that are asking me these questions? So my partner and I started a fund to where you can contribute money to this fund.
Mm-hmm.
We will then, as we compile your funds and Justin's funds and Sierra's funds, we can compile these funds and we will, in essence, act as a bank to the people that we work with that flip homes,
right,
who have an end buyer already in place. We take that money and we are, in essence, the bank. So the first question that people ask is, what's the safety portion of it? Well, what happens is we give them that money. We are first lien on that property. It's extremely safe. So if something happens, the guy leaves town, I've got that property and I own that property and I can sell that property. So we allow people to contribute money to this fund. And then what we do, if you're older, meaning you need the income, you can take money, give it to the fund, and we'll give up to a 12% return annually, paid out quarterly. So you can say you put $100,000 in and you get a 12% return, we'll pay you quarterly there. You have that option, or you can let it compound.
Mm-hmm.
That has been great for people to put money in something that is extremely safe, where we can give them a return on their investment that is totally alternative. It's a wonderful thing. It's extremely safe, and it's been extremely profitable, not only for the people and investors, but also for the people that we're helping in the real estate business.
Why do you think so many people are gravitating now towards safety as a characteristic of their money?
In 2008, I was working as a college football coach, and there was a guy in the office next to me named Will Holthauser. He was in his late 50s. He had a plan to retire in 2 years. The market took a dip of 30 or 40%. I remember sitting in the office drinking coffee, and he says, my retirement fund has collapsed so much, I'm going to have to work an extra 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think that everyone knows someone like that.
Totally.
And I think that the fact that people want safe, they're not worried about an exponential 50% return. But if they can make money on their money,
mm-hmm,
and use it as a safety net, and it's safe, but it's got a better than average return,
mm-hmm,
people want that.
Yeah.
And so if we can provide that and help people, and to me, it's the same thing. I'm not selling anything.
Yeah,
I'm giving these people that ask me these questions a place to park money,
mm-hmm,
and make money on their money.
Yeah.
And if we can do that, it's right. But I think that's why people are wanting something a little safer.
I totally agree with you. So, totally agree with you.
Hey, this has been great. You've done a great job. And
that was fun, man. I mean, we could keep going.
Oh,
forever,
there's so many things we could talk about. We could niche down so much. But if someone wanted to find you,
yeah,
and had questions, because you're more of an expert on IBC than I am, where could they reach you?
Yeah, unlimitwealth.com.
Okay.
That is why we built that site.
Great.
There's a tremendous amount of education. We have our own podcast. Mm-hmm. Our podcast is called Save Yourself Podcast. It's on Spotify, Apple. And we try to basically break down everything infinite banking with blogs and videos and everything mm-hmm. on that website. So you could find us at unlimitedwealth.com. You can find my contact there. You can actually go there. If you want to book a meeting and have a conversation with us, you just fill out the intake form.
Yep.
It's just, you know, two or three clicks and we'll, you know, shoot a Calendly over and get on a Zoom and we'll just spend 30 minutes just kind of hearing your story.
Yep.
But you get to spend as much time as you want educating yourself on infinite banking. If you want to take action, you dictate the time frame and we're just here to help whenever that time has come.
Wonderful. Jordan, thanks so much.
Thanks, bud.
All right.